Today we're going to talk about our favorite games of the year. We've got 22 hours. We're locked in a very small room. Oh, are you ready to go, Brad? Let's do this.
Yep.
Let's
drink a power smoothie this morning. All proteined up.
You know what? Forget it. We're not going to do games of the year.
No?
Games of the decade.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Fez, number one.
Wow.
We're done right there. Getting out in front of it.
Well, Geometry Wars didn't come out this decade.
Spelunky also number one.
So that's out. How about... God, it's a blur. The 2010s.
You like Mass Effect, right?
The 2010s are a blur.
Yeah.
You know, Mass Effect 2 barely
squeaks in.
Made the decade. It was like the end of January 2010, I think. And I'm sure you're not talking about Mass Effect 3.
Look, I like Mass Effect 3.
There are good things about it.
I'll play that game.
And bad things about it.
I like the combat.
It's Mass Effect 3 is a land of contrast.
Yeah. I don't like that they caved to Roger Ebert and changed the ending.
Mass Effect 3 is not art, is what you're saying.
Mass Effect 3, definitely not art.
Okay.
No. Andromeda, though.
Ooh,
there's
that
art.
That's art. That's a certain form of art.
You can't have art without pain and suffering. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
Let's talk tech. I'm Brad.
I like that. That's a tagline. We have a tagline now.
Let's talk tech.
You got to say that every time now. That's your bit.
Short, monosyllabic.
Yeah.
Some nice alliteration in there.
On a t-shirt. People would buy that.
I've been thinking about that one for 5 seconds.
So we missed last week. Sorry.
We did.
I was traveling. Brad, you were, as we alluded to earlier.
We were toiling in the game of the year mines.
You recorded like, what, 15,000 hours of podcast that week or something?
Unearthing a number of awards.
Yeah. It's too much.
Chiseling them out of the rock. Sometimes it feels like that.
So anyway, I came back. Usually we record on Saturday. Yeah. I came back. We didn't have time to get the show together after I got back. And
sometimes life intrudes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're back this week. Yeah,
sorry.
We're here.
Sorry, please forgive us.
And now that Thanksgiving's over, it's the holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. My favorite time of year. I'm a complete holiday mark. Is that the right word? I'm a sucker for holiday stuff.
Your house is very festive.
You think so?
I think so.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Like when, like,
we put some work into it.
You've got the most important award lights up.
We've got leg lamp lights from Christmas Story.
I like those.
They're a little cheesy.
But you got a little Santa Claus hanging over on the lamp there.
Yeah.
This is.
Some might say it's the most wonderful time of the year.
I put lights on my house.
Outside?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's the benefit of having a house.
You've joined the great American light fight.
It's also the curse.
Yeah.
Well, look, when you have a kid, you're either the kind of parent that says, "Dad, I want to put lights on the house." And you say, "No, we're not doing that because that sucks." Or you're like, "Yes, I think that's a cool idea and we can have some fun together."
Yeah. I started to say parenthood requires certain sacrifices, but that doesn't sound like a sacrifice. That sounds kind of entertaining.
I got a new thing this year to make putting the lights on the house easier.
Oh,
yeah.
A decoration tech?
A decoration.
Decoration?
Look, it's like a thing that you screw onto the end of an extendable broom pole.
Okay.
But it let me put the lights on without climbing up on the roof of the house.
A thing that removes the need for a ladder.
I am all in.
Wow. And it works well?
It works well enough.
Good enough.
So you have these special clips and you put the light on the clip and then you jam it in on the edge of the gutter. You like tilt it down and snap it in place.
Okay.
Or if you're doing them on shingles, if you jam it up under the shingles, which seems really dangerous to me.
I don't know if that's a good idea for the roof.
I don't know. This is light tech. This is where we are.
Yeah.
I guess I could put hooks up. But you just kind of hook it and then jam it in there and you're done.
Just get a good wedge going.
Yeah, I did the whole thing in like an hour.
I can see the appeal having turned 40 recently. Yeah. You know,
exterior lighting is our mandate.
But also anything that requires applying torque to your back is potentially a risky endeavor.
Well, so the problem with our house,
getting the ladder out of the equation, not a bad idea.
Well, there's no place to lean the ladder against the house because we have gutters on all the sides that aren't terrifying. And the sides that are terrifying are really tall.
And you can't put a ladder on gutters. Probably not.
I mean, if you wanted to be a lot thinner, you can.
Okay.
They're aluminum.
Okay.
They'll just crunch right in. So, yeah, I don't know. When I was putting gutters on the house last year, I didn't really think it through. So,
do you have to clean the gutters?
Yeah. And there's no easy way to do that, it turns out.
That is some dad shit.
Yeah. I love cleaning gutters.
What kind
favorite.
Of lights did you guys go? Lights are kind of interesting now that LEDs are in the mix. And
yeah.
Like, they've enabled, like, you know, a lot more color change options and different types of light and stuff like that. But they've also made things a lot more complicated.
Do you want to do this? You want to get into this?
I spent a lot of money on Christmas lights over the last couple of years. So sure. I'm just curious what you're running out there. If you've got any cool automation or like pattern type stuff going on or anything.
I mean, I wish I looked at that because you could get RGB addressable lights from China. When I bought the lights for the house, I guess we've been lighting the house for like 3-4 years
specifically
now.
Specifically the
RGB, but then you'd have to manually map each light, and like if you wanted to do like a cool pattern or something, it was a process.
Got to write scripts for your Christmas lights.
I'm not writing scripts for my Christmas lights. No. We bought GE Globe. The ones that are like the conical with the little twinkly, the twinkly lenses, so they get a good twinkle on them.
Icicle lights or something?
No, they're not icicles. They're just normal. They're just normal multicolor bulbs, and they're all like there's a pattern. It's like red, yellow, green, blue. Orange is the key for me was that the orange had to be like warm and not like a bright fluorescent-y orange.
Yes, that is an ongoing issue with LEDs. Did you do colored lights as a kid, or white lights, or incandescent lights?
Like, so when I was a kid,
they're not actually white. They're more of a goldish orange. Like incandescent lights blue, have a weird.
Yeah, incandescent lights are real warm.
What I mean
is
like the ones that are multicolored versus just the plain.
So when I was a little kid, we had big bulbs, like the big glass bulbs, and those were multicolored.
The big bulbous ones.
The ones that like you screwed in.
Okay. Oh wow, on the tree.
On the tree.
Oh wow.
That. Thinking back on that, it's amazing we never burned the house down.
real trees?
Real trees until I was in high school.
We always did the real tree, and then we burned it after.
I lived on a tree farm.
Did you provide your own tree?
Look, for a few dark years, we did.
Wow.
The unfortunate thing about tree farms at the altitude we were at, because we were only 1,500 feet, you couldn't grow firs. Like Fraser firs and the kind of desirable Christmas trees didn't grow there.
Oh.
So my dad was like, you know, people like white pines. We're going to plant a bunch of white pines. Turns out people don't like white pines. So we had a Christmas tree farm.
Oh, wow.
That they planted the trees when I was 6.
Inadvertent Christmas tree farm?
No, it was on purpose. Okay. He thought he was going to pay for college this way. And
it's an entrepreneurial spirit.
I feel like I've told this story a million times. But yeah, he planted the trees. He was like, you're going to farm. I mowed between the trees for 10, 12 years, however long it was. And then we started selling when I was 15, and we started selling it at like $40 where you come and cut your own. Nobody wanted that. So we immediately dropped the price to the good ones. Like you wanted an 18 foot tree from our farm, $20. Wow. You're in and out the door.
18 feet, man.
Yeah. What happened is people come out to the country. They're like, I'm going to cut a tree. It's going to be a fun family activity. And then they'd get out there and we'd hand them like the old jacked up rusty bandsaw that we used to cut down the trees, and they'd start on it for about 2 minutes, and then they let the kids take a couple of swipes, and then they'd send one of the kids back to the house to get me to come cut the fucking tree down. And that's how I spent my summer break pretty much every year in high school from dawn till dusk. People would be there at 6 o'clock in the morning, no hesitation.
Is that what you call felling a tree?
The worst part of the whole thing was dragging the tree back.
Yeah.
Because like people are, they've cut the tree, they're committed to it. You start dragging it through the field. They're like, hey, we got to pick this thing up. So then I have to chuck it up on my shoulder and carry a 40-pound tree. Anyway,
you're probably covered in sap.
Feelings about. So we have a fake tree now. Yeah. That's the answer to your question.
Same.
We did multicolored lights on the house and we matched them to our neighbors.
Oh, wow.
Because like our houses kind of face each other.
Okay.
And so like the line of our roofs looks exactly the same.
Okay.
Well, we both had to replace lights at the same. We both got new lights at the same time.
Color coordinated.
We worked together.
That's cool.
And then inside we have a fake tree that has the lights built into it, which is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Like detachably so? Like, because I mean, you can get pre-strung light. Or trees.
That's so the lights,
like they're not actually integrated with the tree.
They look like they're strung because like they have little wires that come out of the branches. Yeah. It's really like, look,
could you pull the strings off, or they're actually like,
it would never be right again.
Okay.
The lights are integrated with the branches basically.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And
I've seen pre-strung trees, but they were just, you know, off the shelf lights that had just been wound around. No. This is different.
So this is, it's like 7 feet tall and it's three pieces that are like umbrella, the branches like umbrella up so you can store in the summertime.
Sure.
And you drop the umbrella into the piece of the pole before it, and then it just connects magically. I don't know how that works.
Sounds cool. Wow.
And then you
nice tree
push the branches down. The secret of fake Christmas trees, buy them on January, buy them like right after Christmas. Yep. Uh-huh. Turns out Lowe's doesn't want to store that shit for a year.
That's just like Halloween candy the first week in November.
But the lights are the right amount of warmth. Like they're not blue eye blaster LEDs, white LEDs, and it has a dimmer, which is all I wanted.
And they are LED though?
Yeah, they are LEDs.
I guess that leads me to my next question of what happens when one of those bulbs go out?
We're just going
to
do this, huh? This is all Christmas lights this episode.
I debated whether I should even ask this old man Christmas story style question of why does an entire string of lights go out when one of the bulbs dies? But that's worth talking about.
Well, so they don't anymore.
The follow-up question is, does that even affect LEDs or are they inherently, not designed that way? But well, is it as simple as it's just a simple circuit that's being broken when one of the bulbs dies?
Yeah. So on the old school bulbs, they would die because the lights were all wired in series. So like the wire would come out of one light and go into the next one, go into one light and out of the next one, into one light and out of the next one.
So it's the same current flowing through the filament in one bulb that then, so when the filament breaks, that's where the circuit's being like, so.
Yeah, all the electricity has to go through that filament. And when that filament breaks, then all the electricity stops.
That's what I assumed.
For the entire run.
So the strings that where that's not a problem, does that just mean there's extra wiring through the string that carries the current?
That's it. There's a third wire.
So what was the upside of ever designing it that way in the first place?
Cheaper,
just saving money.
Yeah, it was less, cheaper,
less wiring.
I mean, look, in the old days when I assume they would send small children into the copper mines to get copper, and like those Christmas lights were paid in blood, Brad.
Okay.
And
pennies per string adds up.
Yeah, you don't those children's blood's on your hands. You can replace the fucking bulb, man.
We spent so many years buying cheapo, no name incandescent lights and then having them die by the next year and going back to CVS and doing it again.
The day of a thousand curses when you would take the lights out of the attic and you'd roll them out in the living room.
Yep.
Every year. Plug each one in and not like one out of five strands would light up on the first try.
Two of our three strings from last year died when we plugged them in this year. So
Brad, it's the future, man.
Yeah.
I'm the thing I like about the LEDs is I feel on the years when I have real trees, which hasn't been recently, but probably in the future sometime, it's nice because they don't get hot.
Yeah.
So you're not like taking a piece of firewood with a bunch of tinder still on it, letting it dry out in your living room for a few weeks,
and then applying heat to it.
Yeah. The downside is like a lot of the stuff that just works by default with the old incandescent Christmas lights, like dimming.
Yeah.
Doesn't work at all, or works badly with the LEDs.
A lot more complicated.
We're going to talk about LEDs this week. We're going to talk about lighting.
And yes.
More so, like dip into a little bit more home automation stuff, I think.
Yeah. Because that kind of dovetails.
Yeah.
Turning lights on and off is a key use case for automation.
So when I set up the SmartThings hub in my house, the first thing, it was for Christmas one year.
Really?
Because I wanted to plug the Christmas tree lights, and like we have a window behind our couch and we'll put festive lights around that and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have them all controllable because I didn't want to have to bend back down behind the sofa and unplug them every night. And I had a SmartThings hub that I'd backed on Kickstarter, and I plugged that in and plugged in a couple of power control boxes. And that was the beginning of my home automation journey.
Are you saying that Christmas decorations are the pornography of lighting technology? The thing that drives, the thing that pushes tech forward before anything else?
Have you seen Twinkly?
No. Yeah, well, yes. Actually, you showed it to me briefly before.
I haven't
seen it in person.
Okay, neither have I.
What is Twinkly, Will?
Twinkly... I talked about the RGB. Do you know what RGB? Have we talked about what RGB addressable LEDs are? I mean, you know what they are.
Yeah, you can change the values to change the color.
Yeah, right. And each you can take a big long strand, and each light is addressable independently. Right. So like one can be red, one can be blue, one can be white, one can be off.
Yeah, I think we've touched on that stuff a little bit before, and I'm sure that's like Philips Hue is like a nice high end example of that.
Well, Hue's not individually addressable. Oh, though.
Okay.
So like the $80 strand that Hue sells, I think you can only set one color for the whole chain.
Interesting. So that's how the cheapo knockoff like Shenzhen originated light string I've got works. Like it's through Apple Home, but you can only set one color at a time.
So for example, do you remember the Game Frame, that thing that my friend Jeremy made? It's like it's a little 16x16 pixel display that he uses to show pixel art, and it's like a foot by a foot.
I think I've seen that.
So there's one in my office at my house. But,
okay.
Basically each of the LED, it has whatever 256, is that right? Is that 16x16?
That seems right. You might be right.
Yeah, it's 16. Let's say theoretically that 16x16 is 200.
You might be right.
Fuck, this is terrible.
The iPad does not have a calculator on it. So
no, you're just typing into Google. Google will tell you. If only there was some other way for us to calculate this information.
If only.
It's worth mentioning we're recording fairly early in the morning. Basically, it's a 16 by 16 grid of pixels, and each of those LEDs is addressable independently.
Right.
But it's basically just a big long chain inside it, right? That just goes one at a time. And those work by taking the most recent number on us. You send it a big long string usually, and the first light takes the first number off and sets itself to that color, passes the chain on, and the next light takes the next one, and the next light takes the next one, the next light takes the next one. And it happens so fast that you just don't see it. Like it just always looks like it's, you know, they all look like they're lighting up at the same time.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't know if this is getting too granular, but do you know what is the mechanism inside each individual light that filters that information and passes it on?
Oh, there's probably a little IC in there.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, usually my understanding is on RGB addressable strips, there's like the LED is mounted on top of a little IC that handles that logic for you. So there's a bazillion of those in each one. And and they take a little bit more power than normal LEDs because of that, because you get the whatever power you're setting into the strip has to power the controller and the LED, not just the LED.
Like right.
You would on a normal strip.
So is that's what Twinkly is, except in Christmas light form or string light form?
They've gone one step further.
Okay.
So they have the RGB addressable LEDs, which you can get anywhere. They've made them look like Christmas tree lights. You just put them on your tree, and then you open up an app on your phone and point the camera at it.
What?
And it fires each light individually.
What?
So that it can tell where each light is.
Okay.
And then
you
put it on the tree. Okay. So it knows. So you, I assume you do it from like two sides or three sides or whatever. So you can get them in 3D space. And then you can program like your Christmas tree to look like an animated candy cane and stuff like that.
Does that give you like an interactive layout on the app that you can tap lights on and off?
I think it's taking
the pictures.
Do you have a keyboard with like backlight and all the fancy stuff where you can like choose the patterns and all that?
Yeah.
It's like that.
That's how it lets you visually turn stuff on and off. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't think you can. I don't know that you can program it. I don't know that you can't. I don't know that you can make your own patterns. I haven't gotten that far into it, but yeah, like basically they have looks like dozens of different patterns that you can make from like subtle ones that are like, you know, a wave of kind of golden light washing up the tree.
Man, that sounds so cool.
Or like the one that I saw that somebody had was like, it looks like a candy cane. Like it's like all, and they kind of go up the tree as they're going. So it's really,
that's
really horrifically garish.
Yeah.
Perfect for Christmas trees.
There is a strong element of cheese in holiday decorations. I will cop to that. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you're not here for some slightly tasteless, like this is the place to get out all your kitsch for the year.
Yes. Absolutely.
Your Mario.
You have to lean into it.
Christmas tree ornaments. For sure. Your blown glass Santa Claus, all that stuff.
If you're not willing to be painfully earnest about this, then you shouldn't even be here.
See the tree topper. I'm noticing you've gone with Q. It's a classic choice.
We have John Delancey is a top our Christmas tree.
I 3D printed a Mario star a few years ago.
Okay. And that's not bad.
Yeah, it's on top. I got a hollow out so I can put some lights inside it, I think. But yeah, that's star. So a nerd star, I think, is an important part of this whole process. Those tree lights are called Twinkly. Twinkly, you can get them at twinkly.com. They're really fucking expensive.
I was just going to ask.
Like, I think 175 strand light strand was like $100.
Wow.
Versus maybe 20, 15 for like a really nice set of non programmable RGB addressable lights.
And I'm trying to think, 175 lights on a, like, what's your average Christmas tree? Let's like 6 feet.
I asked Gina because she does the lights in our house. She's the one with the attention to detail to do that. And she would say that's probably four of those strands, five of those strands at minimum. So
four to $500 to
wow.
Yeah. Do you think that will come down over the coming years?
Always does. So somebody is someone will knock this off and do the same thing.
There's
nothing.
Will this get to the point where you can walk into a Walgreens and find a no name knockoff version of this?
I mean, building the app is probably hard.
Yeah.
Making the app work right is going to be even more difficult.
Sure.
I think you'll be able to buy a bad version of this next year for a lot less
limited functionality.
My guess is that the price on these will come down dramatically as they increase scale too.
Okay.
This is the first, like this is the second year they've done them. I think this is the first time I heard about it.
Okay.
I would assume next year we'll see lots more, hopefully at a better price. And they also do one that's RGB. They do one that's just like cool to warm yellow light. So you can have like a golden kind of twinkle.
That's the kind of classic
incandescent
look. So exactly. Like that's the thing I came in here wanting to talk about the most is the kind of contrast between LEDs and the old school type and some of the complications that come in with making that switch and so forth. So a couple of years ago I bought, and I did exactly what you said, it was like mid-January.
Mm-hmm.
I got four strings of the GE Colorite LEDs.
Those are the former wire cutter recommendation
for still Christmas lights. Okay. Yeah, as of like a few weeks, like 3 weeks ago, last I checked, I think they're still their recommendation for the best LED Christmas lights. But I bought four of them because they were on a post Christmas special, and they were advertised as warm white.
Okay.
Like Wirecutter said, like these are, I don't know that they came out and said these look identical to
incandescents,
your childhood incandescents, but they implied that they're very close. So I went and bought four of them and got them in.
How are they?
They're not, I don't agree with their assessment. I hesitate to call them cold, but they definitely have a very like pure white kind of eye searing look to them. Not that nice, soft, warm, goldish, orangish color.
They are cooler than I would have wanted.
Yes, absolutely. They look much better. We had some cheapo LED string lights from the drugstore from a few years ago that looked god awful.
They were blue, basically, right?
We actually had some that had like the sickly yellowish green kind of cast to them, which I don't even know how that came about. But you could see them flickering.
We had some blue super giant eye burners a few years ago.
Like, that's kind of how the early gen LED lights started out, right?
The first
super cold.
Yeah, the first white LEDs were super cold, which is cold. Cold is a high color temperature, right? It's like 5,000.
I think that, 5,900. I think the higher it is, the more blue.
Like 3,500 is more kind of creamy.
Yeah, I want to say, I think 2,700K is considered sort of the default neutral.
Oh, wow.
Lighting, like room lighting.
Wow.
Like that's what all the Cree light bulbs that we have here are rated at, and they're supposed to be kind of the neutral.
That's what I have. I have mostly Cree LEDs in the house. There's a couple of hues, but mostly the Crees, and I like those. I find them to be very pleasant.
So like the color rates are not bad, but they're not the same. They're just a little garish, a little harsh to look at.
So what did you do?
And they're super bright. Like they are just like searingly bright in a dark room.
Are they dimmable?
They are. I think GE rates them as dimmable. I'm pretty sure.
I can look right here.
So I bought a dimmer that was rated to work with LEDs on Amazon.
Okay.
And they do dim, but like dimming LEDs is such a strange arcane process where there's very little consistency, I feel like, from one light bulb to the next.
Well, usually, so as opposed to incandescent where dimmers work by,
just lowering the
usually they add current. They add resistance before the light, I think, so that there's less current pushing through the bulb. You know, because incandescent bulbs work by heating up a piece of tungsten inside a vacuum,
right?
And that it heats it up to the point that it gets hot enough to glow.
Okay, I was just reading about incandescence again the other day in relation to this stuff, and I was reading a thing that said that something like 90% of the energy is wasted as heat.
That's exactly
incandescence,
right.
Which
that's why LEDs are insanely efficient. Yeah.
Which makes me feel bad for going back to incandescents, but they look so much better.
Christmas tree lights, who cares?
Yeah, it's once a year.
The way LEDs, so there's two things that change with LEDs. Incandescents work with AC power, so the power straight out of your wall. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to convert it. LEDs are integrated circuits, so they need DC power, which means you have to have a power supply somewhere in there. Usually on a Christmas tree light strand, it's like the little box that you plug into the wall.
That's why the plug is so fat on.
Yeah, okay. That's why they have a wall wart.
Okay.
It's basically doing the same thing like your cell phone charger does for your phone, or your laptop brick does for your laptop, or your power supply in your CPU and your computer does for
converting
your CPU.
Power. Yeah.
Yeah. Then to dim though, LEDs do this thing called pulse width with modulation usually, where they flash on and off at a really, really high refresh rate so that you won't detect it, but less light comes out because LEDs are binary. They're on, there's energy going through them, or they're off.
It's kind of thing where if you recorded a video of them, you could probably see the flicker very plainly.
If you have a phone that'll do 480 or maybe even 240 frames a second, you can probably see it. Sometimes the software will detect the lights and cycle.
Interesting.
Like run so that it doesn't, so they don't show up. The upshot though is that the difference between a good LED bulb, whether it's a bulb you plug into a lamp or overhead, and a bad one is usually the hardware in the bulb in the circuit that makes that PWM happen is bad.
Okay.
So it's either flickery or noisy, or it's wobbles, so it's brighter and darker and brighter and darker. It's why I like those Cree bulbs for home, is that they dim really nicely.
Is that, do you know if that's what a rectifier is?
A rectifier is part of the power supply thing that cleans up the...
I was reading basically, I'm sorry, my information retention is not the best lately, but I know that the upshot is that good LED bulbs have rectifiers and bad ones don't.
Yeah.
But I can't remember exactly what function it serves.
So I think if you buy something that's UL listed, probably it's going to have a rectifier would be my guess.
I think in practical terms, it's the thing that eliminates visible flicker, but I could be wrong about that.
That would be what it does. Yeah. So it helps smooth out the power that comes into you. Because like the thing that a lot of people don't know is the power that comes in your house is like, it's all over the place.
Right.
Like when your neighbor's refrigerator compressor turns on, then the power coming into the building sags.
Oh yeah. Like when I turn my AV receiver on, I can like the lamps briefly dim in the room.
When we turn on our dryer, the lights in the garage dim, you know, it's just, the pipes that carry the electricity are just like water pipes, and they can only carry so much at any given time. If you have something that draws too much, it's going to sag the whole thing.
Not to derail this episode completely off topic, but I bought my first UPS over the holiday or over Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Which I have not opened yet, but I'm very excited.
What are you going to use it for?
I'm plugging in my NAS and
it seems good.
Router.
Like
stuff that would be nice to have.
Modem.
Yeah.
Do you have two boxes for your fiber or just one?
I have an ONT.
Yeah. Does that require power for you?
Yes.
Mine does too.
It does have an AC adapter, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to plug that and the modem and the router.
ONT. Well, no, I just have the ONT and it goes Ethernet straight into my router.
What? Really?
So I guess it is all in one. The fiber comes in the wall. Fiber comes in through the wall into the... Oh, but you have AT&T, right?
This is why AT&T sucks. They make you use their bad router.
I've read a ton of stuff about the AT&T fiber in particular. What kind of... You have the Google Home stuff, right?
No, I have... I have a Google Home router. I have the first gen Google Home router, which is actually too slow to route the fiber that I have.
Okay.
You have to get the second gen, the PUX.
Yes.
So I use the AT&T as the router and I just use the Google Home stuff as access points.
I see. Yeah. I don't know why I've spent time reading about this, because it's not like I have AT&T as my ISP, but in the Ubiquiti community, which is, you know, what I have, so that's where I read about this stuff. Like there is a way to set that router up to bypass all the weird bridge stuff that AT&T wants you to do.
They reset it all the time is the problem I had.
Yeah, I think what I read was you have to power all this on, let it do its thing, and then not, like, every time you reset it, you have to go through the whole process.
And every time they push a hard software update to the modem, it has to be reset.
That's really annoying.
It's a drag. If they just give you the PPPoE password, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
Because that's all you need.
Yeah.
But they won't do that because AT&T.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't even know what this episode is about anymore. But so dimming LEDs.
Dimming LEDs.
We got these color rights. Like, as much as they're very cold to look at and kind of a little bit, I don't know.
I think they're bearish. Cold. They're cold compared to incandescents. They're warm compared to all the other. So
that's
LEDs
what I was going to say. Was as much as I found them off-putting for the first couple nights that we had them on the tree. Like by the end of the first week, I'd kind of gotten used to it. Like the color got kind of a nice look to it. I mean, it's you know, a little reminiscent of like snowfall or something like that. But the brightness was the bigger problem.
Do you do the thing where you just like turn off all the lights in the living room when you're watching TV on Christmas?
Yes. And when we have all the lights out in the living room, the regular floor lamps don't get used.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Same.
But
when they were that bright.
Yeah. You want something warm
and distracting. So I've got a dimmer that, like I said, that I got off of Amazon that was supposedly fine for dimming LEDs.
Did a bad job.
So I've had this experience with the Cree light bulbs with these GE Colorite string lights. Mm-hmm. They will dim, but they don't dim smoothly. It's almost like they step down in kind of rigid increments rather than a smooth gradient. The overall window of dimming is a lot more narrow, if that makes sense.
Oh, like I have LEDs in my bathroom fixtures at my house, and this is probably because I have a switch that's maybe not an LED rated switch. Oh no, I know why it is. It's because I don't have control wires in the house. I only have two wires going to each switch in the house, so there's no place for it to shunt unused electricity off to.
Okay.
So they're always on
electrical,
just a little bit.
Electrical everything is so mystifying to me.
It's I call experts for electricity stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like, you know, these will go from max brightness to less bright to off, you know, as opposed to like the incandescents that you can dim down to practically nothing, but still get a little bit of, you know what I mean?
Just a little bit of the juice.
Like there's no nice, very wide spectrum of brightness.
I think that's just a result of the circuits that do the PWM stuff,
right?
Having like the electricity has to go somewhere.
Yeah. All that said, like I was still able to use the dimmer to get the color rights down to a level I was happy with.
Oh.
But the problem is that, so our tree is next to our TV and receiver and game consoles and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Dimming the colorites would cause the colorites to buzz pretty noticeably.
And well, the bulbs made an actual sound,
like a very note, like from 8-10 feet away, like you'd hear it in a quiet room pretty plainly.
Wow.
The weirder thing is the TV buzzed even more when the lights were being dimmed.
Are they plugged in the same outlet?
Yes, they're not the same outlet. Well, the same wall plate.
Same wall plate.
Two different outlets in the same. So they're, on the same circuit.
Still connected. Yeah.
So they're, I don't even know what kind of resonance or harmonics were being generated there, but like the TV was buzzing so loud with the dimmer in that.
Wow, that's really weird.
That it was basically unlistenable. Like it was a pretty alarming sound, actually.
Wow, I've never even heard of that. That's amazing.
Well, I could demonstrate it for you after we're done here. It was really.
Yeah, I want to see.
Disturbing. I was like, I don't know if this is actually some kind of fire hazard or not, but I'm not going to have this for the next 6 weeks here, so I'm just going to buy some more lights.
I can't imagine it's a fire hazard, but it would be probably really not, annoying.
But it was very annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like something you'd want to listen to.
It's like, remember when people used cold cathodes for LED, for TVs, for LCD TVs, and they would buzz eventually, like the bulbs would start to get bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. That's it. I have no idea. If people know why that would happen, send a note. I'm sure we have some electrical engineers that are listening.
Yeah,
screaming at their radios.
I got some interesting information from. Again, I use the Chack News community as a wellspring of technical know-how.
They're great.
Yeah, I got some like fairly academic answers about, you know, with some graphs and so forth of why that was happening.
Yeah,
but a lot of it was over my head because I'm no electrical engineer.
Was it like square curves versus sine waves and stuff like that?
Some stuff like that for sure. But. So I ended up just taking the colorites off and spending the money on. I went back to Wirecutter and bought their recommended incandescents. And
you could have gotten those twinklies. Yeah, you could just be a candy cane right now.
That's what we had when I was a kid. And I just, you know.
Oh, I mean the twinkly twinklies.
No, but I mean we have just the plain incandescents. And I'm just, you know, I'm in the phase of life where I'm just trying to rosebud everything now. So I wanted what I had when I was a kid.
Well, it's funny. That's what we had when I was a kid was the warm whites always. I like them. I'm looking at your tree. There's something ineffable about the twinkliness of the white incandescent lights, the warm white incandescent lights, because they just the thing about LEDs is there's a single point where the light comes from. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of that kind of noise. I don't know if you've noticed, but when you do an LED, like a flashlight, it always has a little bit of a noise pattern, like Perlin noise almost.
You mean like if you shine it on a flat surface, you can kind of see it?
Yeah. It almost looks like a laser, like a bounce back off of a laser or something like that.
Yeah.
And because this is not a point source, it's a line source for these bulbs, they have a different quality.
I see what you're saying now that I look at them. They've got a little bit of a halo effect around them. It's just really nice and soft.
And you get it looks like a J.J. Abrams movie. There's like little lines coming out and you're like
200 lens flares.
Yeah, let's get all the lens flares. I mean, maybe I need to clean my glasses. I was at my parents over Thanksgiving and they have all incandescents there because I live in Virginia and you can still get incandescent bulbs. And like, I didn't mind that at all. Like it didn't make me come back and think, oh man, I miss incandescent bulbs. I like the LED bulbs and I'm happy with them. But I'm looking at your tree. I'm like, man, that looks really good.
It's good enough for me to feel okay wasting 90% of the electricity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not that much
for a few weeks a year.
Yeah, plus it warms up the house. You have to run the heater less.
Yeah, that's true. The last thing I was going to say about lights is, and I showed you this before you came in here. Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of a crash course in the way LED lights age.
Shocking to me.
I know. I had no idea until a few days ago when I looked this up. So I mentioned I bought four of those colorite strings like, two years ago.
Yeah.
One of them I strung over a set of shelves in my computer room 2 years ago when I got them, almost just shy a month or two, plugged them in and have not touched them since. Like they've been running 24/7 for almost 2 years.
Okay.
They still look fine when you look at them.
Yeah, they look good.
Like there's, you know, they look like you would expect a string of LED lights to look, but last week we got another one of those strings out that I bought 2 years ago that we had never used that has just been sitting in the box and plugged it in on a little tree right next to them. And the difference in brightness is like stunning.
So that's,
like you saw it like
always on for basically 2 years.
Almost.
That's 17,520 hours ish.
Yeah. Yes. And those, the GE rated these lights at 20,000 hours. So not quite there yet.
Okay.
But close.
You're close. They look half as bright.
Yeah. They are seriously diminished. And I didn't know that about LED lights at all. Like I started Googling around after, cause I looked at this. I was like, did I put a dimmer in there and forget about it? But I checked and I had not. So I started Googling about it and I actually ended up on Philips's website. Cause you know, Philips is one of the original players in the LED light bulb game, right?
Yeah.
And they have a big page of like, here are some misconceptions about LEDs that we have the answers to. And the first one on the page was myth number one, LED lights last forever, which I had totally fallen for.
Well, I mean, they say they're like 100,000 hours or 25,000 hours. Well,
it depends on the lights.
It depends on the bulb. Yeah.
Some of them are cheaper than others. But the upshot is that LED, like that is intended or expected behavior of LED bulbs as they just dim over time. Like that's how they age. Wow. It's not like incandescents where they burn and burn and burn and then the filament just dies and then they're done. LEDs continue emitting light, but they get dimmer and dimmer over time until I don't know if they'll ever go out fully or not.
It's like the heat death of the universe.
Kinda, yeah. It's like very, it's something melancholy about it, right?
Wow.
They don't burn out, they just fade away.
Well, so okay, but if they, so then there's a question, because the whole point of these is they use less energy,
right?
But like an incandescent bulb, pretty easy to recycle. It's just glass and sure, a little bit of metal.
Yeah.
LED bulbs have integrated circuits and the whole thing in them. Are they, can you, you can't just chuck them in the recycling
bin. That was one of the other questions they addressed on the Philips site was, can these be recycled or okay, are they dangerous to recycle? And what they said was they can be recycled like any other piece of electronics. So you can't just chuck them in your blue bin and have the city pick them up.
I got to take them to the electronics.
But they also, recycling, they flat out also said like they don't contain lead or any of the other like really bad.
Huh.
So you want to recycle them responsibly, but they're not like toxic, I guess.
Well, so I wonder what the total energy cost of manufacture of LED bulbs and recycling of LED right, bulbs is, yeah, versus the 90%. It's got to be, that's got to be less over 20 or 30,000 hours than the energy that like 50 incandescent bulbs would burn.
It has to
time,
still be a net environmental savings, like a massive one, right?
Man,
especially with the energy savings of, you know.
Yeah, 90%.
Yeah.
Over 85%.
Surely it's still superior.
I'm curious. Yeah. If you've done the math, send us an email to techpod@content.town.
Send us a proof.
Yeah. Wow, that's fascinating.
It was really eye-opening. I had no idea. Like I thought LEDs, you just bought them and then plugged them in and forgot about them. But
I've told my daughter she's never gonna have to change a light bulb, but that was a lie.
One of the sites I was reading about this stuff on made an interesting point that because of the cost savings, a lot of new construction is using integrated LED lights, like office buildings and stuff like that.
Oh, places like in the ceilings and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Places that that would have in the past used, I guess, what you would call a cold cathode, right? Like the big long fluorescent tubes and stuff.
I think those are just fluorescents, yeah.
I didn't realize there was a distinction there.
I don't know what the difference is, but I've never heard anybody call them cold cathodes before.
Okay. Anyway, they were saying, you know, a lot of newer, like, kind of businesses and offices are using LEDs now. But it's created this weird problem where with, you know, every other type of light technology, they're on and then they're not. You know, like it's very obvious when you need to replace an old school light bulb because they just die.
Yeah. Whereas gets darker and darker.
Whereas now we've created this weird gray area where you're not going to perceive them dimming consciously over time. But at some point in 2 or 3 years, like you're just going to have way less light than you started with. Well, and it makes it hard to know when they need to be replaced, especially when they're integrated into the construction.
That's shot. So
yeah, it's a weird problem.
Well, it's a weird situation because like if you're the custodian of a big building, if you're the maintenance guy, you change those bulbs once in your career.
Right.
Maybe twice.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
It's a strange problem to have. It's not a critical problem, you know, like you're still getting some light out of them, but just to have this weird sliding scale as opposed to just a really obvious crash.
Well, but it's also interesting because it means that we can't, like, I had been assuming that people were building these LED lights into things, assuming that they were good forever.
Right.
That we were going to have to replace them. So yeah, they still have to be, it's not like we have Star Trek lights where they're just like flat panels in the ceiling.
Right. And again, you know, if you're okay with less illumination over time, like it's not like they're going to burn the house down. You don't have to go out and replace them.
Well, I mean, the good thing is as we get older, our eyes get more sensitive to light and we're able to see better in the dark. Right. So eventually I'll just be walking around in the pitch black. I'll be able to see great.
It's like a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you control? Do you have a control scheme for your lights?
Yeah, we've got this is kind of pre sort of Wi-Fi connected home automation. I guess this is like the predecessor to that. Mm-hmm. We bought them, I think, off of Amazon, like, God, 8 years ago or something. They're branded. The ones we have are branded as Zap, but the actual company, I think, is eTech City.
Oh, yeah. eTech City. I know them. I loaded up my Ono Sendai cyber deck and logged into the eTech City site.
Everybody's favorite. They're just big, fat, ugly wall plugs. They plug into the outlet and have a plug in them.
Oh, okay.
And they come with a little cheapo remote with buttons on it, and they're just on off toggle I think they use an RF signal.
I have one of those that controls the inflatable guys in my front yard for maximum tastefulness. Yeah.
It's basically like a Wi-Fi smart plug, except not Wi-Fi. It just has its own proprietary remote.
Yep.
I looked them up on Amazon just to refresh my memory before this. It says strong RF signal, so like they don't need line of sight, which they don't. Like they work well in the living room. So
you demoed it. You were able to turn off lights in here from in the other room.
Yeah. So we've just got all our lights are just daisy chained on top of each other and plugged into those.
Oh, that's nice.
Toggle them on and off instead of having to crawl behind the TV.
Like I said, for us, I integrated smart things. So I have some smart plugs, which have gotten, I had to buy a new one the other day and they've gotten kind of cheap.
Okay. This is a topic of great interest for me because I would love to have everything on Wi-Fi network that can be programmed and automated fully at some point, but the smart plugs have still been a little too pricey for me.
Well, so
I'm curious what your brand of choice is and that sort of thing.
So the stuff that I bought years ago were a mixture of Samsung / SmartThings Zigbee boxes and Z-Wave boxes from GE.
Okay. Zigbee is a standard.
Both Zigbee and Z-Wave are standards. They're basically like 2.4 gigahertz mesh networking standards.
Okay.
And they do more or less the same thing. There's some good stuff. Basically, I think Zigbee came a little bit after Z-Wave, and Z-Wave is kind of inheriting the legacy of the X10 nonsense. So there's some weird stuff about Z-Wave where I don't think that the standard requires an object to report its state back. But it can.
Okay.
So like you'll have a situation where some like smart bulbs are a weird case, right? Because if you flip off the power switch at the switch, there's no current going to the bulb. So there's no way for it to report back. And I feel like Z-Wave handles that less well than the Zigbee stuff does. Okay.
To be clear, these are their own physical signal standard. They don't go on your Wi-Fi.
These don't have their own
wireless network.
Yeah, these are separate wireless mesh networks.
Okay.
So like the problem with Wi-Fi for home automation is if you don't have good coverage, and this was more of a problem like 3 years ago before Wi-Fi mesh networks were a thing. But if you don't have good coverage over the whole area, then you'll, you know, like it has to connect to your access point. With the mesh networks, it just has to connect to the next nearest thing with the same kind of radio.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
And the benefit is obviously you don't have to have like when you're talking about a thing that lives right next to the plug, which is noisy, probably behind a bunch of electronics shit or like on a wall someplace where it's inaccessible and probably only has an internal antenna, getting good Wi-Fi signal in is hard, especially if you're in a larger house. Yes. In an apartment, it's less of a concern.
Yeah, we do have that problem with some of our plugs. I mean, we'll get to that. But
yeah, so the Zigbee and Z-Wave stuff, because they're mesh networks and because they each have a couple of radios in them so they can send and receive at the same time, is less of a problem. And also, because they're intentionally a really low data throughput standard, they optimize it a little bit differently.
So good reliability overall.
Much better reliability than the Wi-Fi stuff I've used.
Is that stuff still pretty prominent, or has it mostly been replaced by Wi-Fi, like by the Google Home and Alexa stuff?
It's like 50.
Can you still get that stuff pretty widely?
Well, I want to say you can get a version of the Alexa, like the high-end Alexa tall speaker, like their big one. Is either a Zigbee or a Z-Wave controller.
It has that stuff built in.
It has that stuff built in.
No kidding. Of course, that would require putting one of those in my home, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, but like you can get smart things. They're like, I mean, they go on sale, but I think they retail for like $100 for the hub. And you can get bundles that have a hub and a couple of plugs and stuff like that. So Samsung also makes Wi-Fi smart plugs. So when I was looking at smart plugs the other day, the Zigbee and Z-Wave stuff still has like a $10-$15 premium over the Wi-Fi ones. So the Samsung Wi-Fi plug was $15. I only buy plugs now that I can plug into the bottom plug without blocking the top plug in an outlet.
Yeah.
The Samsung ones will block whatever's on either side of them. So if you have like a forehead, you're going to block the one on the left, or you have to get one of those little dongle, about the little extension cords that are like six inches long.
Yeah.
So they're 6 inches long and you just plug them in to plug wall warts in without blocking the other outlets. The Wi-Fi one's been a complete piece of shit.
Huh.
It works great with the SmartThings app. SmartThings is in a bad spot right now because they have two concurrent apps running. One is like the new version that integrates all with all the Samsung stuff, like stoves and washing machines and stuff. The other one is the old classic SmartThings one from before the Samsung acquisition, and you can't connect anything that's Wi-Fi connected with that.
Okay, but the new one does integrate the Zigbee and Wi-Fi stuff?
It does everything.
Okay.
But when I paired Alexa and Google Home and the HomeKit and all the stuff that I use with that one, it just doesn't control it.
Wow.
So the only way you can control this Wi-Fi plug is with the app on the phone.
Oh, that's terrible.
Which when you're used to doing, and like even the scripting stuff isn't working right. So I've got to dig in. It's entirely possible. It's something I've done. They wanted us to do a process to migrate from the old app to the new app before we started using the new app. Probably didn't do that. So this isn't, it's entirely possible it's my fault. I'm not a fan right now.
Yeah.
The other differentiation on price on the smart plugs is whether they're dimmers or just on offs. And the trick with that is you have to buy, you can only put lights on dimmers. Like you can't put anything that draws any real current on the dimmer or you'll blow it up. So for example, if you wanted to put your tea kettle on one of those things, so it turns on your hot water in the morning when you get up and you have coffee first thing, you can't, that has to be on an on off plug, not on a dimmer plug.
Okay.
Cause it has a heating element.
Okay.
It'll, you know, it's like the little sign in the airport bath, the airplane bathroom that says 15 amps only or whatever.
Yeah.
Three amps only, shavers only. That's what goes in the dimmer ones.
Try to pull too much current.
Yeah.
Through it.
But I mean, on the plus side, I have the ones that I have plugged into that are dimmable. Like I have Cree bulbs that are just normal ass Cree A19s or whatever, that are dimmable, and they plug into one of those GE things. And it's awesome. Cause when it turns on and off, like the GE one is all, it like brings the lights down gradually. It's not like just a snap and your lights are off.
Oh, that was a good double snap. Wow.
Huh. Can't do that at the same time?
I cannot left hand snap to save my life. I can.
Did you have some sort of injury?
I am not snaptress.
Today I learned.
What you're describing is the other reason I haven't bought into a bunch of extra smart plugs. It's not just that they're still a little bit pricey for my taste. It's also just that mixing and matching all these standards, trying to control everything from a unified interface is still just kind of a mess. Like we don't even have that many, but even we have enough for me to feel like it's just a little bit too messy and incompatible.
Well, so the benefit of doing like smart, the benefit of doing a hub like SmartThings or Wink or one of those, or rolling your own with HomeAssistant.io, I think is the other one.
Yes. There's Home Assistant. There's OpenHAB. I guess we'll get into that.
There's
stuff,
a couple.
There's all kinds of open source. There's Homebridge, which I use. I think you also use.
Yeah, I use Homebridge.
There's a lot of homebrewed solutions to automation that are also a little wonky.
So the strategy I recommend when you're doing home automation stuff and you want to do a hub versus a bunch of Wi-Fi things is exactly the problem that you said. So Z-Wave and Zigbee are standards. SmartThings, Wink, all those places post a list of everything that they know that's compatible with their devices, because like it's like old DirectX where you can do some parts of the standard and not other parts. Almost everything works now. Like those things have gotten big enough in that scene that people support SmartThings, people support Wink, people are starting to support Home Assistant. I haven't seen OpenHAB as much, but it's a little bit newer, I think, or at least it's come to prominence more recently. I find having every, like the key when you're setting this stuff up is to not like use the Hue app for some rooms and the SmartThings app for the other. The thing is to pick the one that's going to be your main, and you want to pick the one that's the most extensible. So SmartThings or Home Assistant or Wink or one of those, and then connect everything else to that. So connect Alexa to that, connect Hue to that. If you have some Hue bulbs, connect your Wi-Fi stuff into that service.
This is so insanely Byzantine. Well, there's just so many different layers to keep track of.
Well, so it's an awful setup.
Yeah.
And this, the process of like learning how you actually use your house, it turns out is the benefit.
Yeah.
Cause like I never,
are you talking about like just your living habit patterns?
Yeah.
Like what times of day you need lights and that sort of thing.
Well, it's not even that, thinking about what things are what things should be the triggers for when you need lights.
For sure. Like location or time or
Okay. Is it like opening the front door? Do you want to have the lights on when you're coming up when you hit the neighborhood? So they're on when you get in. How do you know when you should turn off motion sensors and not turn lights on when the motion sensors are on? How do you tell the thing that you're sitting in your living room, it's not detecting motion, but you're watching TV and you don't want the lights to go all the way off?
And even my limited experience, that is absolutely the fun part of the home automation stuff.
That stuff's great. It's really good. You understand how you live better.
Yeah.
And once you set it up, it's really easy. So you like everybody in the house doesn't have to understand all this stuff. Just one person does. My kid can work it,
right?
Because I took the time to figure it out and set up the right routines and scenes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that like when it's her bedtime, we say, hey, it's bedtime for the kiddo. And her room turns off all of her lights, turns on her nightlight, starts playing the music that she likes at bedtime, and she can go to sleep.
I can't.
Robots watching over her.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like to be a child growing up in a world where the stuff already existed. You know, it's like on one level, it's kind of like living in Star Trek, you know, it's just like computer dim lights to 50%.
Oh, she's going to watch Star Trek. She's like, that's stupid.
Right.
That computer can't even do this. Totally. It doesn't play music. We went to my parents at Thanksgiving. They're a little bit backwards on the technology. They live in an old farmhouse. They didn't automate it when they rebuilt it.
They have barn Wi-Fi.
She was upset that you couldn't control the lights. She was fascinated by the fact that you could turn the lights on and off with the switch, because we don't let her do that in our house because it messes up the smart bulbs. And B, she kept asking, I took a Google Home because she uses that for like her toothbrush timer and to play music at night and stuff. And I took that and she kept asking the Google Home to turn the lights on and off and was pissed that it wouldn't work. It's like, oh man.
That's, man.
Nice job, Dad.
I'm barely used to things like rotary phones and landlines and payphones being an antiquated novelty. I'm not ready for light switches to join that category, but I guess here we are.
Yeah.
So, man, like I said, I would love to buy into more home automation, but I just like, are we just not there yet? I mean, we've got two iDevices plugs.
Okay.
We've got one TP-Link smart, I forget what their branding is. It's smart.
The bulb or the plug.
It might just be smart plug. It's TP-Link.
You can probably integrate all these. If you bought a hub to integrate all of these, you could probably make them all work together.
They're all Wi-Fi. And right now I'm just using Apple Home because we have iOS devices and that seemed like the best default way to go.
Yeah, if you're using Homebridge for that, you're good.
So that's what we're doing. Like the iDevices stuff have native. So the iDevices stuff have native. Are they still calling it HomeKit?
HomeKit.
Yeah. So
HomeKit is the API. Right. Home is the app.
Is the interface. Yeah. Right. So the iDevices stuff have native HomeKit. The cheapo knockoff RGB strip that I bought has native HomeKit.
Oh.
The TP-Link does not.
Okay.
So I set up Homebridge on my NAS to provide that intermediate layer.
Yeah, so we should explain what Homebridge is, because it's important. Homebridge is, if you have stuff that works across different APIs or that isn't supported by one ecosystem, Homebridge will let you wedge that into that ecosystem.
Yes. It's open source. It's got a GitHub repo. It's Node.js, I think.
There's a boatload of plugins. Yes. So there's like plugins for everything. There's a Nest plugin that I use that probably is going to stop working given their changes.
Oh, interesting. Because it relies on, you know, volunteers maintaining the plugin compatibility and stuff.
Well, and it depends on usually an API layer accessing the other service or hardware.
Right.
So
if the manufacturer stops exposing the
which is what's happening with Nest.
That sucks. Well, are they Google now?
Right? So like it sucks, but the reason they're doing it is probably smart. They were really loose with API keys early on, and they gave all API keys kind of similar levels of access to the hardware in your house and to the data that you get out of the house. What they're doing is they've made a segmented thing where there's like low level access that Samsung can get because they're a trusted partner. But if you're just a normal developer, you can only get low level access to your stuff. And if you want to get like, you have to be vetted before you can get data access to like whether people are home or not.
Yeah. I was going to say, maybe that's wise at the end of the day. I know this is kind of apples and oranges, but based on recent events around Ring cameras in children's bedrooms, maybe giving that level of access to devices like that is not the best idea.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
So those stories are local news bullshit.
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say they're bullshit. I mean, they did happen.
Look, here's the thing. Part of the problem is on Ring. The stories are, I set up a Ring camera in my kid's bedroom, my 8-year-old's bedroom, which is creepy as shit.
First of all, like, that is a separate conversation, but what the fuck are you doing? Why are you putting a camera in your kid's bedroom?
So if you have like home caregivers, like if you have babysitters that watch your kid and after a part-time nanny or something in your house, I can...
For an infant, I kind of get it.
Well, yeah.
But this was the story I saw, the local news story going around I saw was for an 8-year-old. Like, that's, I feel like that's really... over the line. But so I'm not a parent. I can't criticize too much.
When our daughter was old enough that she was starting to tell stories and talk and have conversations, I was like, we have to take the camera out of her room.
Right.
Because we had the monitoring camera when your baby is young is the difference between you getting up and going into the room every single time the kid gets up and makes a noise and like being able to look and see that, no, this isn't something worth getting in, which saves you a lot of hassle in terms of like kids sleeping through the night and expecting you to be there every time they make a gurgle. So it's a good thing up to a point, but once they start to be people, like I didn't want my kid growing up in a panopticon.
Right.
And as a result, we pulled the camera as soon as she was like a year, 14 months or 18 months, something like
that. Right. Like our broader surveillance state is already bad enough. You don't need to recreate it in microcosm in your own home.
No, I want her to be uncomfortable by that. Just like I am.
But the story is that there was a Ring camera. Is this the only incident? Did it just get repeated everywhere?
This has happened a bunch because people are bad at passwords.
Okay, maybe this is the only time it's been caught on video and passed around. I'm not sure.
Probably.
Essentially, the parents had a Ring in their 8-year-old daughter's bedroom, and somebody gained access to it on the internet and did a bunch of creepy stuff. They played some I forget, some kind of music.
They played music from a horror movie.
Just said, "Hey kid, I'm Santa Claus. I want to be your friend." Just like real creepy.
Destroy your room. Creepy. Kill your parents. All that stuff.
Child molester type scary shit. Like, it was really unsettling to listen to.
However, Ring offers 2-factor authentication.
Yeah.
Like the thing that Amazon has said, and like Ring has some questionable practices in their past. I trust Amazon to, if there was a breach, to say, yes, this was a breach of our services, versus this is a person who chose not to use 2-factor authentication and who probably reused the same shitty password on every fucking website that they've ever signed into. Yeah. So, I mean, look, if you're going to put a camera in your kid's room, make sure it's secure, as secure as you possibly can.
And
it's on Ring for not educating their customers.
Yes, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I get both sides of the argument. Like, you do need to exercise some amount of personal responsibility when you're going to put cameras all over your home. But at the same time, like, people are bad. Like, most people that are not giant nerds like us are not great at InfoSec, right? Like, they're not.
But there's a service that Amazon could subscribe to for Ring customers.
That's what I mean.
That says, "Hey, this password is part of a breach. You should not use this password here."
Like, I'm
the
not,
same as 1Password does.
Like, I'm not going to put all the blame on the end user, like some people have, and say, like, "We'll just use better passwords and use 2-factor." Like, what are you doing? But like,
well, yes, do that.
You should. Yeah. But not everybody thinks about that stuff all the time. Like, I feel like it's more on the manufacturer to put some more guardrails in place.
I want to talk about it next week.
At least educate people a little bit better about it.
It's really, I spent a significant portion of my Thanksgiving break getting my parents set up on a password manager. It's hard.
Yeah.
They're bad.
Yeah.
Like, even the good ones are bad for normal people.
Yeah.
So I get it. But Ring could easily put something in their sign up process, prompt people regularly, not let them use the fucking camera until they do the thing.
Like, they should put more effort into gently coaxing people toward better security practices.
I'm kind of okay with lax security on a doorbell camera that's facing the outside of your house and is arguably a public space. I'm less okay. Like, I think that Ring, if you're putting cameras at Nest, this is why you shouldn't buy cheap IP cameras on the internet, because God only knows who they're connecting to. Like, this is the one place that I actually do trust the shitty faceless multinational corporations more than the small guy. But yeah, secure that shit if you're gonna put it inside your house.
I'm just of the mind to minimize the number of Internet of Things in my house that have recording facilities of any kind.
Look, Brad, in like 10 years, you're going to be like, you know, we were sitting talking before the podcast. I really wish I could remember what we were talking about, because you don't have an Alexa here. You're not going to have that information, but I will. I'll just be able to download everything I've ever said in my house from Amazon. This is fine. This is the future. If there's no secrets, if no one has secrets, then there's no reason to have secrets.
I don't like where this is going. I already threw my Kinect in the trash. I'm not.
Yeah, I hope you put in the electronics recycling.
No, I didn't actually trash it. It's in a box somewhere. Okay. But just the fewer microphones around here, the better.
PlayStation VR microphones right there on the top.
That's where I'm at.
The camera there.
Yeah.
All the depths. Let's see. I use, for external lights, I use one of those, just a GE. It's a thing you jam into the ground on a stake, and it doesn't get wet.
Okay.
It has some buttons on it, a light sensor, so it turns on at dark. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I feel like we're
that's an episode.
Yeah, that seems like an episode.
Yeah, I just the home automation stuff, I feel like, is just not quite there yet for me to like fully buy in and kind of want to.
It's pretty good.
It's good. Yeah, it's just, again, like, you know, I'm having to set up a homebrew thing to increase the compatibility of the different devices I have, and they don't, like I said, like, or like you were talking about, the Wi-Fi coverage can be a problem.
That's the one off though. The thing I will say is that the bulbs and the switches and the in-wall switches and all that stuff, I don't. Like, every once in a while, Samsung will push a big update that requires me to do something. Like, when they do a major revision to the software on the hub, for the most part, it's just works. And there's something really nice about like pulling into the driveway and the front porch light being on in the house and like being able to walk it, but also not having it on when we're not there. So we're not pissing away a lot of electricity.
When it works like it's supposed to, it's like nothing else. It feels like living in the future in a good way. It's super cool.
Like, I go in and I can tell Google to set the lights in my office to like the studio lighting setup for the Twitch stream, or to like a little bit dimmer for when I'm working, and it knows how to do that. It is it's lovely. The best part about the whole thing is having every light in the house be a dimmable light, mm-hmm. basically. So like at 10 o'clock, the lights come down like 10%. And at 11 o'clock, they come down another 20%.
Oh, I love that stuff. We're big on mood lighting around here.
Yeah. And like, if I want to watch a movie, I tell Alexa to we're going to watch a movie, and it puts on the TV backlight and dims, brings everything down. And it's dumb.
It's fun.
It's really dumb.
It's dumb and fun.
But it's really nice. And it was awesome when we had a baby.
Yeah.
So like when we had a baby and we were walking into rooms and like don't have a hand free.
Oh, sure.
You're like getting ready. You're finishing bath or something, getting jams on, changing a diaper or whatever. It was nice to not have to like fumble for the light switch every time you walked in. So we didn't drop the baby because of home automation, Brad.
Home automation, saving lives.
I guess that's it for this week.
Yeah.
We do questions more or less every month, I guess.
Something like that.
Yeah. So if you have a question about this episode or anything, mm-hmm. techpod@content.town.
I'm sure we have the answer.
If we don't, we can find somebody who has it.
Probably.
We're the experts. Yeah.
We're the intermediaries.
We're the filters.
Yes.
We're the curators.
We're the aggregators.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be back next week with another. I think. Are we going to try ray tracing? Is that what you're thinking?
I think we might.
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah. It's time to trace rays.
I like to trace some rays.
Yeah.
Yes. Quake 2 RTX. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm Will Smith.
I'm Brad Shoemaker.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Will Smith.
Yep.
And I Twitch stream sometimes on twitch.tv/notthatwillsmith.
Yes.
We'll be back next week with another episode.
Thanks for listening. Happy holidays.
Bye, everybody.